Wow, this is exciting. I'm sitting down at my desk, about to record my first podcast. This is an opportunity that I've been looking forward to for quite some time. And thankfully, as a result of this class, content marketing at George Brown College, I, Jason Burke, get a chance to learn how to record a podcast, tell a story, create an audio file. And share that with my network in a way that hopefully, is enriching to everybody's life. I chose the podcast because I think it'll add value to some of the projects that I've currently started. And the goal of today's podcast is to talk about, the evolution of sneakers and sneaker culture over the last quite some time. And so I've decided to break the story down kind of into three sections today. I broke it down into the in the beginning. Just talk a little bit about the history of sneakers, sneaker culture, what's important to me. Kind of a walkthrough of the 80s. I've also got a section called When Shit Became Real. And that's, really more from a career perspective, my life in the sneaker world. And then I close it off with what's next. Just kind of an overview for what I think is going to happen in the sneaker world long term and what I think it means for everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I look forward to hearing your feedback as far as the podcast is concerned as we get towards the end. So the fun thing about these podcasts is they tend to go quick. So I'm going to try and just kind of keep to the points here and stay focused. If you recall, the first section that we talked about was in the beginning, how I became a sneakerhead and what was it that attracted me to, the business of sneakers and the style of sneakers. And for me, it kind of starts with, the old adage, fashion fades and style stays. And for me, that adage goes back as far as literally grade two. I remember, my mom getting me a pair of corduroy pants for back to school. And that pair of corduroy pants just not quite cutting it for me. It was important for me to go back to school and feeling stylish and kind of setting my own tone, being a little bit disruptive, which is part of my DNA. And, this blue pair of corduroy pants just wasn't cutting it for me. So I decided to take that pair of pants and I tapered them. And I found a way to make that pair of pants my own. And a big part of that was I also wanted to make sure that anybody that saw me really understood what pair of sneakers that I was wearing. And that's a big part of the rationale for tailoring those pants. So I did that. And that was kind of awesome. The next part of that, which really was kind of an evolution, is we used to spend our summer times in New York and LA. We had a lot of family in those two cities. So we would drive to New York and then we'd fly out to LA. And when we were in those two cities, we got a chance to do a lot of shopping. And that's when on Flatbush Avenue in New York, we would discover emerging brands like Nike and Champion. And then we'd go out to LA and we'd discover brands like Ocean Pacific and Vans and Ron John Surf Shop. And so, as far as my style is concerned, I had a little bit of East Coast in me as well as a little bit of West Coast in me. And both those styles were heavily influenced by hip hop and hip hop culture because those were the cultures that I was immersing myself in when I was in those cities. As far as the segment's concerned, I guess it really wouldn't mean anything if I didn't talk about sneakers. So, I guess the part of this story, in the beginning, the real tipping point for me was how it came to be that I got my first pair of Jordan 5s and my Scottie Pippen Air Flights. Basically, the story goes something like this. It was my 16th birthday. My father was on his way to work. I had been bugging him for sneakers for a long time. And I was like, "Dad, I need these sneakers for basketball." And my dad left that morning and he left me a blank check. And with that blank check, I hopped on my bike. I went down to Foot Locker, and I copped a pair of Jordan 5s and Air Pippin flights in red. And literally, can you imagine this? 20, 25 years ago, dropped $500 on a pair of sneakers, much to my parents' chagrin. Who could have thought that, you know, a young man like myself would go out and the first thing that I would do is buy sneakers? Anyway, I did it. And it was one of the most memorable moments in my life because, you know, Michael had not even won a championship. Michael was just getting started. And that was the beginning. That was the tipping point. So now that you know where it started, I'd like to focus on the next chapter in my life, which is called When Shit Began. And for me, what that means is how I was able to turn a pastime into a career. I got started in the sneaker business working at Foot Locker, and that's how I put myself through university. As an athlete, you know, as a student athlete, I needed to earn an income while I was in school, and so Foot Locker was a perfect place for me to spend my extra hours in the week learning about sneakers and sneaker culture. And that's where I learned a lot about Nike and what Nike was doing to position themselves as the leading athletic footwear brand in the world. And that approach was to introduce Nike Air, Nike Max Air, and Nike Max Air Squared, and just continuously adding more and more air to the products and to get athletes to buy into both the technical as well as the fashionable aspects of the Nike product lines at the time. Moving on from Foot Locker, I decided that the next perfect opportunity for me would be to go to work for Nike. And in going to work for Nike, I learned about what they call FIT, which is functional integrative technology. And it's really about identifying how products work for athletes, both on a functional perspective and on a fashion perspective. And it's about this time also that Michael Jordan really started to take his game to the next level. And, you know, as he became a champion, a perennial champion, actually, that sneakers started to spill off the court onto the streets from a style perspective. It's not to say that this wasn't happening before. It just wasn't happening on scale. And this is when it really started to happen, because this is what we're talking about, a period in time during the 90s. So the combination between, you know, Nike adding more air to their sneakers and having a really functional story to tell, and Michael Jordan being, you know, the perennial champion that he was, and, the, you know, basketball as a sport of influence starting to spill over into the streets, that's where sneaker style really started to take off on a global level. The next step for me in my career was taking on a job with Athletes World in Canada. A friend of mine was told me that Athletes World was looking for a buyer for their young men's apparel. This was a traditional sporting goods store that had never really had any experience with buying denim or young men's fashions. And at the time, my experience in both sports and as an artist was a perfect fit for them, because they were looking for somebody who really understood the consumer and who could understand how to interpret the trends. So within a year and a half, I quickly became the largest young men's lifestyle buyer in the world. I did work with Sean Diddy Combs, who owned Fat Farm. I also did work with Jay-Z, who owned Rockaware. And through that experience, I got closer working with brands like Reebok, who launched Jay-Z's shoe, and working with, you know, Marc Ecko Enterprises, who basically designed all of their shoes, all of their clothing, to tie back to all of the coolest and hippest shoes in the marketplace at the time. So when you want to talk about the connection between like sneakers and style, that for me really happened in the 90s when there was an emergence of young men's lifestyle brands that began to pop off, brands like FUBU, Mecca, Academics. And from a style perspective, those jerseys and those t-shirts, they were all designed to tie back to the clothing, because that was the look in the streets. So, what's next? You know, as we get into this kind of like concluding section, I just wanted to talk about those typical questions. Where did you get those kicks? What's your favorite pair? How high and how low have you shopped for your holy grail? And how many pairs do you have? Well, first of all, I no longer disclose how many pairs I have. It's irrelevant. I also don't have a favorite pair. It really depends on the mood. You know, I like wearing shoes with no socks in the summertime, so I'm always down for a pair of Vans. I like what Nike has really done with Flyknit. You know, I think the fact that they've reinvented old silhouettes with sustainable materials makes the product really culturally relevant in today's world. But I also really stay away from those questions because I feel like, you know, it's an unwinnable game. It's not a game that, unless you know you're LeBron James and you make the most amount of money in the world and you have Nike producing new shoes for you all day, every day, that you can win. And the only thing that I think that you can continue to the only thing you can do to continue to separate yourself is really just focus on defining your style. And that's what makes being a sneakerhead, particularly in Toronto at this particular point in time, still really an awesome experience. We just won the NBA championship. We know that sneaker culture is heavily driven by like basketball and basketball culture. And so that's really kind of exciting to me. So I tend to want to focus my time and effort on the problems that I have as a sneakerhead today, more so than like the typical questions. One of the problems that I have as a sneakerhead today is storing my sneakers. For example, my OVO Jordan 9s with black caviar from NBA All-Star Weekend when it was here in Toronto, those right now are pretty high in my holy grail rotation. So when you go to sneakerbox.com, that's when you have an opportunity to see the prototype for a clear front-loading sneaker storage solution that I developed a couple of years ago and that I'm working on sourcing right now in order to be able to bring to market. I also think that there's an opportunity to keep investing in the culture. I think that a lot of people, you know, with the advent of influencers, have kind of continued to try and tap the culture. You know, the only reason they post sneakers is because they want coupons or they want free sneakers or whatever it might be. But there's a sneakerhead in Toronto. She's not really a sneakerhead. She's an artist. Her name is Brioni Douglas. And I think she's done a phenomenal job of investing in the culture. And by investing in the culture, what I mean is she's creating original art. And if you saw her show last fall called Homage, it was really special. And if you've seen the work that she's done for Fear of God lately, I think that she does a great job of not only setting the tone for women, but for setting the tone for men, for Jordan sneakerheads, and for anybody who's just genuinely interested in sneaker culture, regardless of race, creed, whatever it might be, which is to me is really special. So she's investing her time in creating newness and innovation for the culture. And then the last piece for me is kind of, you know, listen, sneakers deteriorate over time. Anybody who tells you they've got tons and tons of sneakers and that they're holding on to them, you know, that's a fool's game. Sneakers need to be treated like cigars. They needed to be stored and placed in ways that they last for a long period of time. So I'm looking at ways to invest the $300 instead of spend the $300. So in summary, you know, I wanted to take the opportunity to say thanks for giving me this experience of creating a podcast and having an opportunity to share my experience of becoming a sneakerhead and talk to me a little bit about the future. Mostly at this particular point in time, you know, if there was something that's going to resonate with you, is as much as I love sneakers and as much as I love buying sneakers, it's not practical for me to continue to invest $300 per pair of sneakers that's going to literally be destroyed in 6 to 12 months. So now I find a big part of my passion has me either creating merchandise of my own through the brand Sneakerbox, and or taking that $300 and investing in often 3 to 4 shares of Nike or Adidas or Fila, because I feel like I have a better shot at increasing the value of my sneakers and also giving myself the type of money that I need to continue buying sneakers through investing. And that's investing in sneaker brands, but now just doing a little bit wiser and investing in those sneaker brands through the stock market. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. And I look forward to seeing you back here at sneakerbox.com sometime in the future. Cheers.